live from Phoenix, Arizona. This is the Progressive Technology Hour, and I'm your host, Bill Alec. Just to give you a little background about myself, I'm a degreed electrical engineer, and I currently do software consulting work for major corporations. That describes my day job. At night, I become Dr. Houdini, researcher, explorer, and experimenter in the world of exotic technologies. What are exotic technologies? Well, with such areas as free energy, gravity, anti-gravity control, the study of the nature of time and time travel. We'll explore not only the technology, but also the how-to part of the technology. So let's have some fun today and explore the world of exotic technologies. Folks, my two special guests today are Dr. Bob Kuntz and John Hutchison. Dr. Kuntz is attempting to create technology that will allow the extraction of usable amounts of energy from the vacuum. This research follows the work of Nikola Tesla and Dr. Thomas Henry Murray. While working at Lawrence Berkeley Laboratory, Dr. Kuntz headed up a team of 12 physicists which looked for evidence to support the existence of a class of particles referred to as anomalons. John is a self-taught scientist who reports to have accidentally stumbled onto a collection of phenomena known as the Hutchison effect. During attempts to study the longitudinal waves of Nikola Tesla back in 1979, some of the effects produced include levitation of heavy objects, metal samples turned transparent, metals turned into jelly, and spontaneous fracturing of metals. The Hutchison effect has been well documented on film and videotape and has been witnessed many times by numerous credentialed scientists and engineers. His findings have been televised in the U.S., Japan, and Canada. John brings to the table what appears to be the proverbial holy grail of cutting-edge exotic technologies. Bob and John, welcome to the show.
Hello, Bill. Hello, John.
Hello, Bob. Hi there, Bill.
It's good to talk to you, John. Great. This is a great honor. You know, I'm a real fan of yours, and I consider your work to be among the greatest experimental efforts in the history of the world, although it's not yet been recognized, but the facts remain.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, you know, I think it's an honor to have both of you on the show today. And, you know, what I'd like to talk about, opening up the show here with, is, you know, I did an experiment back in March that it's a replication of the Bushman experiment. And this is where he dropped two rocks, and one rock had the opposing magnetic field configuration of some neodymium magnets. And, you know, when I did this experiment, I was just trying to do a crude replication here of Boyd's original experiment. But I know, Bob, that you had some thoughts about refining this experiment and take it to the next level. Let's get into that a little bit here.
Okay, let me just first say to everyone exactly what it is you did. You put two magnets, two powerful magnets in opposition, a north pole against a north pole, or perhaps a south pole against the south pole, and then you dropped two similar configurations, one with a magnet inside, one without, and observed how they arrived at to the ground. And the ones with the opposing magnets didn't hit the ground quite as fast as the ones which didn't have the magnet. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Now,
whenever you put electromagnetic fields in opposition, you tend to create scalar waves. For instance, if we have two canceling photons that are 180 degrees out of phase, you create scalar waves in that particular case. These are waves where the electromagnetic signature is very much reduced, and it produces, I believe, the reduction in the electromagnetic coupling constant, and that is associated with all known forces, I believe. So now, how do you refine the experiment that you did? I really do encourage you to refine that experiment as it was done, the rocks didn't hit the ground at the same time, but there wasn't enough separation in time of those two systems. So if you could get a greater separation in time with more powerful magnets, maybe bolting them together more tightly and work on refining it in that way, that's one way, is more powerful magnets. And perhaps a longer flight path might also help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I spent some time just trying to find a location that had a vertical drop here in Arizona. And I found this place at the Creative Life Center. But the drop was only, I think, right around 30 feet.
Yeah.
And, you know, I went around looking at some bridges, you know, in the area.
Yeah.
And, you know, there you have a few hundred feet.
Mm-hmm.
A vertical drop.
Of course, if you drop it into the water, you have to recover it, though.
Yes.
Presumably you want to recover it. And I don't know. The problem may also be releasing the two elements at the same time. You might mm-hmm. want to rig up a relay so you make sure you release them at the same time within 25 milliseconds of each other. I think I did some calculations, and you need to do that. Now, let's make sure our listening audience understands what we're talking about here. This is something that's extremely important. This is anti-gravity, basically. Mm-hmm. We're talking about magnets affecting the gravitational field influences on a falling object. And according to Bushman, according to others, if you put magnets in opposition like that, you reduce the effects of gravitation. But there is absolutely nothing in modern physics which says that should happen. There's no coupling, known coupling between the electromagnetic force and the gravitational force. So this would be revolutionary physics in a way. If you could refine it, you have the potential to stun the physics world if you can get them to listen. Now, mm-hmm. John Hutchison has been doing outstanding things, and of course he gets some attention, but it's a little hard to get the mainstream physicists to really come on board with all this.
Well, you know, John, you've had quite a few visits, you know, at your laboratory up there in Vancouver, there observing some really interesting phenomena. Now, do you still have that lab up there in Vancouver, or what have you been up to lately?
Oh, good heavens. Well, the lab is still there, and my last demonstration, excuse me, was for CNN News and Fox TV. The lab's still up there. I'm in Rice, Minnesota, working on power cell development. And my friends here have really accelerated them up to, perhaps, I would say, oh, my goodness, about 1,000 times more powerful than they were before.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me make sure that people understand what he's talking about. John has developed a little crystal devices, and they vary in size from what I've seen, and they are able to produce power without... This is not a battery. These are devices that produce power, probably involving scalar physics. And John gave me the formula for some of these devices. I built seven of them. I got one of them to work very well. You can short out these devices for a year, come back, take the short off the device, and it'll still be putting out power.
Well, that's amazing, Bob.
That is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Am I right in this, John? Am I representing this correctly?
Absolutely perfect, yes. 100%, mm-hmm. for sure.
Now,
these devices are quite interesting. There's another gentleman also working with that is Dr. Marcus Reed, I believe. And he's got some interesting results over a number of years, these power cells.
Yeah, I'd like to also correct a record. Art Bell and George Norrie and others have, and numerous other people have said that John has accidentally stumbled upon these effects, such as levitating a 75-pound cannonball. I don't believe this is accidental, and this is very sophisticated, too. John Hutchison has, what, three 1-megavolt Tesla coils, and then a multi-megavolt band de Graaff electrostatic generator working in conjunction with this, and then there's RF modulation at about 485 kilohertz, which is a very special frequency that I'm quite familiar with in scalar physics. So when you're talking about several Tesla coils in tandem, producing canceling electromagnetic waves with a DC potential from a multi-megavolt band de Graaff electrostatic generator, we're talking about very sophisticated equipment. This is not some minor high school project. And John didn't accidentally stumble upon this. He spent 15 or 20 or 30 years developing all this over a period of time. John may not have the formal training of a conventional scientist, but he understands what's going on in a an intuitive level. And so this is a great accomplishment of John's. Imagine a wrench, a 7 or 8 inch crescent wrench, just without being melted, just turning into a U shape, or a steel bar that just fragments and breaks up and or liquefies or becomes transparent. All these things John Hutchinson has done. It's a lifetime achievement. And if the physics community other physicists were to wake up or understand or know what's going on with John Hutchinson's work, they would be shocked, and there would be a tremendous amount of effort devoted to understanding what's going on. This is extremely important physics. This is what this is: space travel, new forms of medicine, material science, philosophy, even every aspect of life is affected, could be affected by this. Extremely important. Again, this is a very sophisticated operation that John Hutchinson has been working with up here. There's several beautiful Tesla coils. John is one of the finest scientific instrument makers that you'll find. He builds things to engineering specifications of the 1900s. If he builds a Tesla coil, he builds it to Tesla's specifications. And, you know, Tesla was a fine engineer. So, you know, well.
It's kind of fun building the old stuff.
You can't say enough good things
like
about
that.
John Hutchinson.
Mm-hmm. It's fun building
well,
those kind of specifications.
You've been working on these power cells here. And now, are you leaning towards commercialization here, or what's the next step?
Well, there seems to be interest in them. There's commercialization. It'll be getting, actually, houses off the grid. And it'll probably be a Manhattan-style project, but there's been interest from various folks around North America, actually Canada and the United States. I'll have to wait and see what does manifest through all that, but it should be rather interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the mainstream scientific community is still stuck in the 1900s using the laws of physics from Maxwell that were bastardized by Heaviside. They weren't correctly transcommunicated from quaternion form.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think so. I mean, most of the scientists I did work with were from the U.S. government as well as the Canadian government and German government. Mm-hmm. So the military scientists seem quite open about all these things, but mm-hmm. the academic scientists are very closed.
Mm-hmm.
Luke here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's always been military scientists, and
I simply just
present it to the news media.
If I write an email message to an academic scientist and discuss free energy or Tesla, any one of these areas that are outside of standard physics, I get no answer, typically. They won't communicate
mm-hmm.
with
no.
me on these subjects.
Yeah. If you go to the Advanced Department of the U.S. Pentagon, they take notice of it.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a lot of communications from them. And if I'm ever in Washington, D.C., they'll take me on a tour, I'm told.
At the Pentagon?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. That was
uh-huh.
the Navy Department. Air Force. I was in contact with the Air Force Division in 2006 and 2005. NASA also contacted me, Duke Fohlenstein of the Kennedy Space Center, as well as other branches of the military. military industrial complex. So it's interesting that they're interested, and they actually wanted to promote my work to the Kennedy Space Center, but the division head, that gentleman said, no, we should just continue on with our original project.
Yeah, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
With rockets.
Bigger and better rockets.
Yeah, yeah, better rockets. Better bombs. I mean, this, you know, you look at the space shuttle and think about some of these UFOs that are scooting around in our environment. And, you know, they zip from one place to another using probably gauge transformations, scalar waves, gauge transformations, anti-gravity. And I'm fairly confident they fly from one end of the universe to the to another in practically no time at all, you know.
Yeah, I think so, too, because...
Yeah, I often wondered, why do they have all the neat toys?
They're about 10 years ahead of us, I believe. I get the bits and pieces, leaks from friends in that area of black operations, if you want to call it that. But I believe that hyperspace is quite possible with new evidence coming out with certain atoms interacting instantly between one another at this great distance.
Well, I think that's entanglement that you're referring to, John. Yeah, I don't know if this has to do, anything to do with entanglement. I believe it has to do with Einstein's idea of a unified field. I think that all field forces are coupled to the electromagnetic coupling constant, and I think the electromagnetic coupling constant is not constant but can be shaped. And I believe that's what you're doing up there in Canada, John. With your experiments, you create mostly, more or less what you do, I believe, is create canceling electromagnetic waves that are modulated a certain way, and that, I believe, decouples the gravitational field from the objects and allows them to levitate for one, in one, with respect to levitation. And so then there's a matter of liquefaction and all the other things that goes on, but... There's a lot to discuss there.
I know that we had quite a problem there a while ago when the entire town of New Westminster was affected by a gravity wave. And that's when the fire marshal came around and City Hall. Because I know the mayor there, Mayor M. Wright of New Westminster, and there was reports of people feeling instantly dizzy. When it was given a main demonstration to Tom Skye, we later published all this information on what he experienced. And since it was on a massive email back and forth, other people in New Westminster picked it up. And then I started to talk to people, and I said, yeah, something did happen. Around the same time, Tom got hit. And Tom went back to Los Angeles, and then he was interviewed by Ken Shoulders and... Actually, some celebrity people that are interested in this kind of field of technology.
Well, you know, I think the Philadelphia experiment probably did take place, and we know what happened there. So there is a potential for serious problems with your experiments, John. Fortunately, I don't think there's been anything serious that's happened, but when you start... reshaping the laws of physics, which is basically what you're doing, but when you're, I believe you're shaping the electromagnetic coupling constant. And so there is the potential for serious things to happen. Fortunately, I think it's mostly concentrated in the areas near your Tesla coils.
Yeah, well, luckily we didn't have any accidents except for Tom Skye there, but he's okay. George Hathaway, Colonel Alexander, and all the other guys were okay during our long, long test runs, as we used to call them, or burns. But they would be using Geiger counters, actually, to pick up scalar waves along the floor. And they put down
a Geiger counter measuring scalar waves?
Yeah. Colonel John Alexander was told by Lieutenant Colonel Tom Bearden, retired. Now, they use a Geiger counter to... try and find these standing columnar waves and scalar waves. So they were using Geiger counters.
Yeah, according to my research, these I call them lambda zeros. The scalar, this would be a new particle associated with a scalar. And quite often they break up, they form a negative mass electron and a positive mass positron. And then the positive mass positron annihilates with an ordinary electron to produce one MeV, 1 million electron volts of electromagnetic energy that starts a cascade. So you get electron-positron annihilation radiation. So that's why you'd get it with the Geiger counter.
Yeah, and I remember them putting X's all over the floor.
Yeah.
When we're running the equipment,
standing
so
waves.
They set the camera
standing
up.
Waves. Standing waves.
Yeah.
You get certain areas, yeah.
It's kind of interesting how they seem to know all this stuff and are quite accurate in their predictions, as well as a Canadian government scientist, Dr. Lauren A. Kuhn, he is the director of the Scientific Technical Intelligence Agency in Canada. And the other group, of course, with John Alexander, was Bob Freeman and a team from Los Alamos. Some of them have been interviewed on TV or Discovery Channel and TLC shows.
You know, I think that some of this has been understood by the or worked on by the United States government for decades. But I think that some of their programs got out of control, or maybe got shut down because they got frightened by what they were doing. There is there's a downside to some of this stuff. Not a downside, but you know, when you start talking about unlimited amounts of energy, when you talk about reshaping the laws of physics, when you're talking about liquefying metals and things like that, you know, there's a lot can go wrong. You've been very fortunate, John, very fortunate.
Well, as George Hathaway said, too, when he was operating the machinery, he got some migraine headaches, but he was mostly referring to the excitement of seeing the levitation. He kind of referred to that in Congress in 1988, along with Tom Beard and then Dr. Andrew Mikowski.
You're pretty careful,
yeah, lucky
too.
I have.
You're pretty careful, aren't you, John?
Extremely careful. Oddly enough, today, September 5th, isn't it?
Yeah.
One of the shows is airing on National Geographic TV and Film, actually, today. And
there's going to be a show airing here?
Yep, on National Geographic TV and Film. People have filmed that, their hair started to levitate. Probably due to the electrostatic, and they all stopped filming and said, are we going to be okay? And I said, yeah, you're going to be okay. There's been many film crews through here. So they continued filming. I'm not sure what they captured, but they have a show reel or a trailer on the National Geographic TV and Film website. It's called The Bermuda Triangle. Is it real?
Mm-hmm. Hey, John. Speaking of the Bermuda Triangle, have you ever produced any of this gray fog? I've created it in my lab with...
I have, too. Sometimes it's multicolored stuff.
Yeah, it's a very strange kind of ectoplasmic fog that... I don't know if it causes you to hallucinate or what, but when you look into this, you see all kinds of self-organizing systems scooting around like they're living entities of some kind.
Exactly. Actually caught that on film, on Super 8mm film, and that's a little sort of
researcher down in El Paso spoke about a device he has using this high-voltage plasma system that opens a gateway, to like another realm or another dimension, and he says these entities can come and go through it.
Yeah.
I think that's what happened when we did the Ark of the Covenant for Discovery Channel. That did happen. And luckily, they did capture it.
That is weird.
If the electromagnetic coupling constant is programmable in a sense, as I think it is. I believe it obeys a wave equation. You can shape matter. You can use the electromagnetic fields, canceling electromagnetic fields to create objects in space and time that have negative entropy. So when you're talking about negative entropy, you're talking about self-organizing systems, living systems. So you can create living things in the atmosphere. And I've seen it in my lab. I think John has said he's seen it. And so this is negative entropy. All of this is outside of the realm of normal physics. When you're talking negative entropy, that's something that physicists will say, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's what they tended to do. Luckily, we did capture a lot of this on film and photographs.
Well, gentlemen, we're going to take a little break here, and then we'll come back on the other side of the hour here. So we're just going to take a short break for a couple of minutes, and then we'll be right back.
Hello everyone, this is Bill Alec. In this new book that just premiered at the Academy of Arts and Sciences in Hollywood, California, delves into our connection with human-appearing extraterrestrials. In Prepare for the Landings, authors Michael Elejon and Aurora Light go into their long-standing contacts and what's in store for all of us here on planet Earth. In Prepare for the Landings, you will learn why this planet has been quarantined and how the ET connection to the Bible and other ancient writings has been deliberately suppressed. Go to prepareforthelandings.com and prepare yourself for the coming shift of the ages taking place right now. That's prepareforthelandings.com. Get your copy today and don't be left behind. Go to prepareforthelandings.com.
We are Dennis
and Alice Jackson, Twin Soul, Spiritual Medium.
Bringing you a safe place to discuss anything you've ever wondered about your connection between this side and the other side. Reconnecting with loved ones and friends who've crossed over to the other side, bringing us all together again.
Messages from beyond.
This is a live call-in show.
Saturdays at 7 p.m.
Thursday nights at 8 Pacific.
I'm your host, Bill Alec, and you're listening to the Progressive Technology Hour. And my two special guests today, Dr. Bob Kuntz and John Hutchison. And before we return to my two special guests today, I want to talk about a really interesting expo coming up next weekend, September 12th through the 13th. It's the Bay Area UFO Expo, and I will be there. Aurora Light will also be there, and Michael Elejon will be there. And we will have some table space at this really exciting expo coming up. So if you're going to be in the Bay Area next weekend, stop by our table, and we have some really interesting things. I'll be doing some demonstrations with anti-gravity at this conference. So I will be bringing my equipment with me and showing the participants real anti-gravity work. So this will be at the Bay Area UFO Expo, and that's coming up next weekend. And look them up. It's the Bay Area UFOExpo.com. And check it out, folks. They have a great lineup of speakers. George Norrie will be there. Jordan Maxwell and Roger Lehrer also will be there. Okay, my two special guests, you know, were is Bob Kuntz and John Hutchison. And before we took a break, we were talking about opening up a gateway into another world. And this is the fantastic. I mean, this is what it's about, folks. You know, exotic technologies. And, you know, Bob Kuntz has been doing some experimentation. Of course, John Hutchison's been doing work in this area for, what, the past 30 years or so. And, you know, I heard about this gateway from a researcher down in El Paso. And I spoke to him just a few weeks ago, and he's interested in purchasing one of my torsion field detector devices that I developed to measure temporal effects at the gravitational mystery spot. And incidentally, folks, if you're going to the Bay Area, we're taking a special little expedition here to the mystery spot, the Santa Cruz mystery spot, and we're going to do a little testing over there. And I'm going to be testing out my torsion field device, and that should be quite fascinating. So if you're going to be in the Bay Area next weekend, we'll be leaving Friday early afternoon. So look us up down there in the lobby. Right around noontime is when we'll be heading over to the Santa Cruz mystery spot. And, you know, check it out, folks. You know, there's, you know, really strange, the strange and unusual is what you're going to hear on this show. So, Bob, you started experimenting with these portals.
Yeah, I got a question for John, a quick question for John.
Well, go right ahead.
John, were you ever able to magnetize plastic?
I think so. There were so many metal samples that, well, actually George Hathaway has in his collection, that he'd be presenting at a Congress in October about. I think we did magnetize plastics.
Okay, here's the reason I ask. You know, Dr. Roger Lehrer removes these implants from people. And when they're doing their field investigations, they sometimes find that they have things like magnetized avocado trees or magnetized plastic or things like that. My theoretical research into scalar waves and gauge transformations indicates to me that we might be in, creating magnetic monopoles with these scalar waves. So I think it's entirely possible that we're creating magnetic monopoles, and these monopoles can spray in and to be sprayed into plastic and wood and all kinds of things, and make them things that shouldn't be magnetizable magnetized.
I think that's what George Hathaway refers to in his lectures as large-scale magnetic monopoles in certain metals and things. As I recall in his presentation to the U.S. government some years ago.
Okay. You know, this has shaped the foundations of physics. They've been predicting magnetic monopoles for years. The existence of magnetic monopoles would explain charge quantization. Why charges only come in integer values, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, countable numbers, integers. So it's a very important theoretical thing. And also, the effects of magnetic monopoles, it's very difficult to say what you could do with this. You know, we're talking about physics. Modern physicists are stuck in the 19th century. They really are. Maxwell's equations are okay for many things, but if you want to do nonlinear physics, you need to include gauge transformations. We got the wrong. Our laws of physics are okay for many things, but if you want to do this really interesting physics that has life in it, then you need to have scalar physics, and that means Maxwell's equations with gauge transformations.
Kind of brings to memory René Louis-Vallée of France and Andrei Sakharov of Russia, mm-hmm. talking a little bit about this many years ago. But I haven't been in contact with them in recent times, but they were...
Andrei Sakharov.
Andrei Sakharov. And René Louis-Vallée.
Andre?
They developed a neutron bomb and hydrogen bomb.
Yeah, I think he's dead. I think he passed away.
So they're in communication with Ferris Technologies, who was George Hathaway and Alex Bezerra and Colonel Alexander.
Mm-hmm.
I have some very intriguing correspondence and equations, which hopefully I can get out there. Some of it's already out there.
There are also health-giving effects of this the scalar fields and the scalar radiation. I do experiments with myself using these magnetic vector potential, and I have tremendously good effects on my health. You know, I'm 62 years old, and I'm full of energy, and my blood work is perfect and everything. And I attribute some of it to this scalar energy.
Oh, same
here. You know, Tom Bearden frequently talked about this sort of thing, you know, with time-reversed waves, you know, associated with scalar waves.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, he's talking about wave cancellation. Cancellation of two waves. What happens when you have two photons that are 180 degrees out of phase, Bill? Ask any physicist.
It would seem like, according to electrical engineering here, the wave should vanish.
Yeah, but what happens to the energy? You have to conserve energy. If you have two photons, you have two units of energy. If you cancel the electromagnetic field, you still have to conserve the energy. It's got to go somewhere. It goes into scalar wave production. These are I call them lambdas, the elementary particles that are associated with this, gauge particles.
But in electrical engineering, none of that shows up. You know,
what
analysis we have here.
They don't include gauge transformations. Go ahead, John.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm agreeing with Dr. Kunz here.
Well, I'll tell you something. Classical electrodynamics is flawed. Unless you include gauge transformations, it is flawed. It will not explain what happens to for canceling electromagnetic waves. And also, there are other problems. The pointing vector for classical electrodynamics is not correct unless it assumes that you have an unlimited number of photons. It doesn't set an energy constraint. If you add the energy density, same thing. When you add two photons with classical electrodynamics, you get four times the amount of energy, and you should only get twice the amount of energy if you add two photons that are in phase, Two photons with each with one unit of energy, you should double the energy, not quadruple the energy. But the pointing vector and the energy density for classical electrodynamics quadruples. And so we got problems in classical electrodynamics. But just try talking to people. These physicists are and engineers, some of them listen. I have people that communicate with me, but The big names, the big guns, they stick to their guns. They won't listen. The academic types, at least.
Oh, that's for sure, 100%.
So, John, are you working on any other projects, or what are you up to?
Well, I've been organizing some of my YouTube videos. Mm-hmm. I've been taking snips from... about several cubic yards of videos I have to put it in that terms, and downloading them onto YouTube, some of the lectures that George Hathaway gave and other people have given, plus some of the TV shows.
This is one of the greatest shames of this era, that John Hutchinson doesn't have his own laboratory. He should have teams of scientists working with him. This should be investigated night and day. And we're talking about something much more important than the CERN we're talking about something more important than what's going on at the CERN laboratory. We're talking about something that's more important than what's going on at any physics laboratory I know in the country. This is fundamental to the laws of physics. We have got the wrong... Well, our laws of physics aren't exactly wrong. They aren't complete. They need to be changed. We need to include gauge transformations. We need to extend the laws of physics. Imagine levitating 70-pound cannonballs with only maybe 200 watts of power.
Well, you know, Bob, this is what we want to do with the Progressive Tech Center, you know, is to organize these leading-edge scientists, you know, bring them together here and work on these devices, you know, and, you know, work on this physics. And, you know, I think about the only way we can make that happen is to, you know, get this 501c3 going and, you know, solicit for donations for this. And bring these scientists together and work on these projects.
That would be cool. You should get George Norrie or Art Bell and Dr. Coons and Bill Alec up to the lab filming everything going on up there sometime.
I make most progress when I'm working by myself. One of these days I'm gonna have something to show that's going to shock the world as much as I hope, as much as John Hutchison. I doubt if I could, but if I could do what John Hutchison has done, I'd be a very happy man.
Mm-hmm. Got great faith in both of you guys. I think you can do it for sure.
I tell you, you know, people don't understand what John Hutchison has done. I mean, I've been a physicist for 35 or 40 years, and I have something of an understanding of what this man has done. We're talking about shredding steel without heating it. We're talking about levitation of 70-pound cannonballs or ice cream or water, and you name it, anti-gravity, time tunneling, making things that become invisible. I just can't begin to describe how important John Hutchison's work is. It's frustrating.
Yes, yes.
Well, I know that George Catholic is publishing a book on it.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, that's what George keeps saying. He's up to 1995. I'm not sure when that'll be up, but...
You ought to have your own laboratory, John. You ought to have your own laboratory, a multi-million-dollar laboratory up in Canada or somewhere. You know, if it was a fair world, you'd have it.
I almost had it. I turned down an offer from actually George Hathaway to move to Toronto, and our sponsorship was Prince Hans Adam Liechtenstein, Prince of Liechtenstein. I just didn't want to at that time go back and be in that kind of environment, because I was doing many other things too. I was actually going to Europe and Japan, demonstrating a lot of these technologies in Japan.
Yeah.
So I just thought, well, okay, and things rolled on to where I just...
You've gotten a fair amount of publicity, and I noticed there was a French film made about you.
Yeah, I don't know, even know what they're saying. But I just found that by accident on the internet and said, well, what's this all about?
Yeah.
They used, I think, an actor for that part, playing me in there.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what they say. I keep finding more information as I go on the internet.
I'll tell you something else. You know, these implants that Dr. Roger Lear removes from people, they emit scalar radiation, scalar frequencies. Like 15 megahertz is a scalar frequency. 93 megahertz is a scalar frequency. These are associated with phonons. Phonons are an important part of scalar physics, but very few physicists know anything about to even talk about phonons. And what about negative mass particles?
I know. Phonons. I remember it.
When you get electrons moving, Bill, when you get electrons moving at the speed of sound, things happen. Superconductivity is associated with electron-phonon interactions. What happens when you get electrons moving at the speed of sound?
Exactly.
Things happen.
Dr. Wilson of DREP, Defense Regions Establishment Pacifica, understood that in his 1986 visit. He was talking a little bit about that in... They're filming of those experiments, which is now still a matter of national security, as written to me by members of Parliament. Yeah,
speaking of national security, this is a national security issue, and so are these UFOs. You know, Dr. Lear is removing these implants from people, and what in the mm-hmm. world's going on? That extraterrestrials are apparently putting implants in all kinds of people. National security personnel, American scientists, ordinary American citizens, and these things, these implants, when they pull them out, they find they have non-terrestrial isotope ratios. They're not of this world. They emit scalar waves, and they also have technological structure that, as you can see with scanning electron microscopes. What in the world is going on? I mean, you know, do we really want to have people or persons from other planets or other dimensions putting implants in us?
You know? I don't think so. I've seen some of the literature in the DOD SBIR program I'm still involved with, but also at the CIA stuff that I got released some years ago for Yin's Gazda's film, Above Top Secret, where she interviews a lot of interesting folks. So she put me to work extracting information from these agencies, which I gave to her, and then she did this epic three-part TV miniseries on UFOs and that, and it's still airing in countries around the world. But I heard one time on Coast to Coast, George Norrie was talking about an implant going on eBay for sale for, as I recall, $30 million, and I believe the program was in 2003. I didn't realize that they would be selling implants on eBay. I don't know if that's true, but George Norrie, I definitely remember him talking about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, John, have you done any work with this this Ormi gold, you know, this white powder gold?
Some work. We brought that up in the Ark of the Covenant, but mm-hmm. we didn't actually test it. We just used electrostatics and other frequencies to activate the Ark of the Covenant.
Okay.
But I never had a chance to play with that yet.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, I've been doing some research in this field, and, you know, there's something very interesting that happens with this gold, you know, when it's converted into this or transmuted into this Ormi gold, is that it loses 40% of its weight.
That's interesting.
And I was rather shocked to hear that.
Have you experimented with that, Bill, at all?
Well, there's a process by which one can convert Ormi gold back into real gold.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just one process you know, we're looking into right now.
Well, that brings up the subject of alchemy. You know, Dr.
Right.
Thomas Henry Moray, I don't know if you've heard his name or not, but Dr. Moray was making gold years ago, back in the 1930s and 1940s. He was taking the basic, I don't know, using lead or what he was using, but he was transmuting metals. John has done this. John Hutchison has done this up in his Canadian lab. He's transmuted metals.
Mm-hmm.
Many times.
That's
They're still trying
thing.
To match them up to the records.
Yeah, I tell you, the potential benefit to humankind of John Hutchison's work is tremendous. If people realize that the money, if you just want to talk about money and economies and things like that, a tremendous amount of money could be made with John Hutchison's inventions. His energy cells he's working on right now, okay, that's important. I can tell you right now, they work. He's got something that he can make energy. Presumably, he can make laptop batteries that aren't batteries. They're just energy cells. You never have a battery for your laptop. It just runs forever. You never have to charge it.
Mm-hmm. There is a race on for zero point, and then Nicoya, the telephone company, or the cell phone makers, have mentioned that in the news media that they're developing a battery that runs forever. And their projected milliamperes is 40 milliamperes for this particular battery. And my gut feeling is they're using some of Dr. Franklin Mead's ideas as well as other scientists' ideas, because Mead's got a patent on a zero-point energy collector, 1996, December 31. And IBM actually bought up all the patent rights to it. So I'm told.
Yeah.
But That goes to show you that there is a race on.
That could be the end of it. You know, I'll tell you something else. There are a lot of patents apparently that get the national security stamp put on them, and that's the end.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. For sure. I've been noticing a lot of that too. When I go into the DoD stuff, I can't find it again. It was on the internet, but I get around to other projects like lead zirconate titanate series of compounds they're investigating right now quite heavily into, like barium titanate.
Yeah, barium titanate. Barium titanate is a fascinating material. It's got a index of refraction, dielectric constant of 3,800 or 5,000 or something like that. Rochelle salt also has tremendously nonlinear properties, and that's what you need for some of the scalar physics.
Interesting to note that one of the suppliers of Rochelle salt says the military is buying up huge amounts of it for some reason.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You can believe it.
I got that from.
Well, they use it for battery. They use it for these these new batteries and for new capacitors, barium titanate and also Rochelle salt and these other highly nonlinear materials with the very large, index, dielectric constant.
Mm-hmm. I think some of them have a negative index of refraction, don't they?
Yeah, also negative resistance, negative index of refraction, negative resistance. Now, that when you're talking negative resistance, what you really want are negative mass electrons, Bill.
Yes.
John, if you can do scalar waves to make negative mass electrons, and if you put negative mass electrons in a circuit, you make power. They have negative resistance. They do not consume power. They generate power. They generate.
Oh, I found that out through the barium titanate cylinders.
Say again.
Oh, I found that out through the barium titanate cylinders I got from Fair Radio Sales in Ohio some years ago. They were available, but they're sold out now, unfortunately.
Oh, well, those were
negative
being manufactured.
Negative mass electrons.
Oh,
listen,
yeah.
Hey, Bill. Bill.
Huh.
75% of the universe is composed of, is made up of something that appears to be anti-gravitic in nature.
Uh-huh.
Okay, what is that? 75% of the universe, dark energy. What is dark energy?
Dark.
And if we know so much, well, if our physics is so advanced, how come 75% of the universe is completely unknown to us? Actually, it's more like 96% if you include dark matter.
Mm-hmm.
95% of the universe is composed of material we don't even have any idea what it is. 75% of it appears to be anti-gravitic. It could easily be negative mass particles, but, oh, they don't want to hear it.
Well, you know, it could be this ORME material, too.
Well, I don't know.
That can demonstrate this anti-gravity effect.
Well, it's interesting to note the Smith coil can do that, too. It was a Canadian project that... Cadaceous coil by Wilbert Smith. Interesting results he received. We did also copy his work when I was with the Boring Aerospace Group, and wow, it had some real unique properties. Something very simple to play with, folks, that want to try that experiment with the Smith coil, as it's called. And
sounds
if
like
you're lucky to find a barium titanate cylinder and an audio amplifier, you can make yourself a small foot field around the device and cause it to levitate a little bit.
Well, gentlemen, we're out of time.
Oh,
let's do this.
As Roy would say, we're at the end of our lolly stick here. Our lolly pop.
Okay.
So, you know, I want to thank you two for coming on the show today. Fascinating discussion. And
it's a pleasure talking to you, Bill. Again.
Nice talking
thank
to you,
John. Well, and thank you, Bob.
Dr. Kuhn.
Nice talking to you, Bill. Take care.
Nice.
Okay. Okay, coming up next, folks, is Michael Elijan, and he explores cutting-edge contacts with cosmic beings. That's next on Achieve Radio. Have a great day, everyone.
We are Dennis.
And Alice Jackson, Twin Soul, Spiritual Mediums.
Bringing you a safe place to discuss anything you've ever wondered about your connection between this side and the other side. Reconnecting with loved ones and friends who've crossed over to the other side, bringing us all together again.
Messages from Beyond.
This is a live call-in show.
Saturdays at 7 p.m.
Thursday nights at